Hello and welcome back to Scottish Independence Podcasts. We've just passed the fourth year anniversary of Scotland being dragged out of Europe against our will. So this week's podcast is a discussion hosted by the campaign group Europe for Scotland from the perspective of several Europeans on the bond between Scotland and Europe and their thoughts on where we are now. It was originally live streamed on Independence Live if you want to watch it, but this is the podcast edition. Hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome everyone to this live anniversary edition of Europe for Scotland on the theme Beyond Brexit, the enduring bond between Europe and Scotland. My name is Andrea Pisauro. I am the co-director of Europe for Scotland. As many of you know, Europe for Scotland is a pan-European initiative which brings together citizens from all over Europe to express solidarity with Scotland post-Brexit and make clear that we very much want Scotland to have the choice to come back in the EU as an independent country. And our long-term goal is for European politicians to echo that sentiment and express our solidarity to the Scottish people. We are hosting this event, obviously, on the anniversary of the formal withdrawal of the UK from the EU 4 years ago. It's been 4 years in which it's fair to say that all negative predictions about Brexit have already come true. And Brexit has impacted all different parts of society. We are seeing the dire consequences of this mistake of historic proportions. Of course, everyone knows it, but I think it's always worth repeating it. Scotland didn't vote for it, didn't make this mistake. There was this very important and significant majority, 62% of Scots voted against Brexit. Not a single Scottish district voted to leave. It's also worth repeating at all times that the Scottish Parliament and government rejected the Brexit process at all stages. There was never an attempt to compromise with the Scottish position by the UK government. So it was a democratic injustice for Scotland to be dragged out of the EU in such a way. But of course, we want to move the conversation forward. We know these facts, we remember the history, but we want to talk about the future. And we want to discuss the future, trying to understand how we can maintain and preserve and reinforce the enduring bond between Scotland and Europe. So we're going to do it with a fantastic panel, and we're going to do it from two perspectives, the political dimension and the cultural dimension. So wherever you are following us, thank you so much for joining us today. And now I want to bring in on stage Nina Jetta, who is the co-coordinator of the campaign together with me. Hi, Nina, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, I suppose. I mean, glad January is about to be over.
Yes, it's known to be the most depressing month of all. I guess particularly this year, there are reasons to be concerned about the future. And we're going to talk about it during the event because in a way, this year is one of the most significant years in terms of the choices that are in front of all of us. I think it's a year in which the highest number of human beings are going to vote in an election. Some estimated that the absolute majority of citizens worldwide are called to a vote. They might vote in the US presidential elections in November, in the European Union parliamentary election in June, in the UK general election at some point during the autumn or God knows when, or even the Indian parliament election. The Indian is the largest democracy on the planet, and the Russian presidential election. So there's quite a lot of elections. Nina, are you optimistic about these elections?
Well, with quite a few of them, it seems like almost a foregone conclusion what's going to happen. And I'm talking about Russia, of course, also India, I suppose. The age of the strong man is not quite behind us, unfortunately. And of course, all eyes are on America, wondering Trump is gonna make a comeback, hopefully not.
I try to be optimistic, but what do you feel, Nina?
I think it is very unfortunate, of course, the electoral system in America, that if America had a different electoral system, if the UK had a different electoral system, many of the concerns that we currently have would not be concerns. The Republicans have not gotten a majority of votes, I think, since 1992 or something like that. No, sorry, one of the Bush terms, he got a majority of votes. But definitely in a lot of these elections, the Republicans got into the White House despite not winning the majority of votes. Yeah, so that's worrying that they have this advantage of the Electoral College. Having said that, I do hope that people will kind of surprise us positively and support for Trump will not be as strong as we fear. And in addition to that, I hope that Biden has some tricks up his sleeve. Still hopeful that he's going to make some announcements that might change how people see him a little bit. Most of all, I would hope that he switches his vice presidential candidate. Maybe more interesting for our discussion is what will be the consequences for Europe. And I think even though Trump is, of course, if he was to be elected, would be very bad news for America, it would be very bad news for the world. Nonetheless, I also think it would be an opportunity for Europe to say, we cannot rely on America, we need to be united. Only together can we be, you know, strong on the international stage and meet today's challenges.
That's absolutely right. I think, and I think in general, there is the notion that Europe needs to move forward with a big plan for reforms. And obviously, in June, there is going to be an important election for the renewal of the European Parliament that has, a lot of issues to be discussed in the next European Parliament. Issues relating to the international situations with the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the tragic and dramatic situation in Palestine. Issues relating to the enlargement process that the EU has embarked on, in which there is a real prospect and a plan to welcome more countries. But there is also, crucially, I think, a need to reform the European institutions themselves. And we were saying earlier that the coming year is a year in which a lot of people are going to vote. But it's not necessarily good news for democracy if the vote is like the one we are going to see in Russia. I want to bring in one of our guests tonight, who is Nicolò Milanese, who is the director of European Alternatives, because Nicolò has done an amazing amount of work over the years in the attempt to make the European project more democratic and to allow citizens to have more of a say in the way the European Union is run. So first of all, thank you very much, Nicolò, for joining us. How are you? Where are you joining us from?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks very much for having me. I am in Paris, locked in my room while my kids try to get to sleep, not so far away from me. So I won't speak too loud, I hope. You have to ask me questions I don't get too excited about.
We'll try our best and we will also try not to speak too loud. We are a big fan of the work you have been doing with European Alternatives and more recently with the coalition that you helped building together with many others called Citizens Take Over Europe. And in fact, as a campaign, Europe for Scotland would like to join these efforts to help democratize in the EU. So I will start by asking you to tell us a bit more about the work you have been doing with European Alternatives and with the Citizens Take Over Europe coalition, to explain to our Scottish audience how they can also perhaps contribute to it.
Thanks for this question. I think that maybe the way I'd want to start to answer it is by picking up on the points you were making before about this year being an important year for democracy. Over half of the adult population will have the opportunity to vote. And I think it's really important when we're talking about that and thinking about what it means and the threats and the opportunities that we don't fall into a trap of multiplying a kind of fear of the masses that a liberal elite has always had about popular participation. The fact that so many people have the possibility to vote is a great thing. Where we can have discussions then is about the quality of the democratic participation that that vote gives access to. As you indicated, Andrea, in some places, voting that doesn't mean very much because the elections are manipulated in other places, and it recalls the Brexit referendum. The quality of the process itself is so badly thought through, and the constitutional framing of it, or rather the lack of constitutional framing of what kind of majority do you need to take such a significant decision as leaving the European Union, hasn't really been thought about. So it's a very bad quality process. And we can also think about whether voting itself is enough as a possibility of democratic participation. And so thinking about the European Union, which was your question, of course, the European elections, as you said, are coming up. But we can ask serious questions about the quality of those elections. In some countries inside the European Union, we shouldn't forget the electoral process is very damaged. Places like Hungary, but not only in Hungary, there's wider problems about freedom of media and pluralism and hate speech and intimidation, and certain parts of the population not being able to vote. One thinks of the Roma, for example, in some parts of Europe having difficulties accessing the vote. There's also a problem about the nature of those elections that, as EU geeks often like to talk about, really what we have is 27 separate national elections happening simultaneously, rather than a genuinely European election where there would be, for example, trans-European political parties you could vote for, and a real debate right across the continent about what is the direction of that Europe should take. One of the reasons there's such a risk of having far right strong representation in the parliament this time is that often, as we all know, in countries like France these days, the European parliamentary elections are taken as a kind of protest moment. And so if you're unhappy with the Macron government, and there's loads of reasons to be unhappy with the Macron government, you might consider voting for Le Pen, not realizing really quite how much power you're giving somebody like Le Pen if they're sitting in the European Parliament, which has no decision over very important decisions, let alone all the money that is given to parties that are in the European Parliament. So there's these kinds of problems about the European elections in general we should talk about. And both European Alternatives, which you kindly mentioned, which has been going for the past 16 years, and more recently, Citizens Take Over Europe, which started during the pandemic and has some 70 civil society organizations in there, has been saying that actually the best way to defend democracy in Europe and beyond is to think about how democracy ought to be extended and advanced, and so to find greater forms of citizen participation in political decision making. So that it's not only about voting, it's also about participative budgeting, it's about citizens' assemblies, it's about the possibility of collective actors like trade unions or civil society having a meaningful ongoing say in how a polity is run. And so Citizens Take Over Europe has been, over the past 3 or 4 years, really promoting the idea that citizens have to have a greater say than just once every 5 years in elections in European affairs. And we've been having some degree of success because after 16 years of European Alternatives saying it, and much longer of other people saying it, the European Union and its institutions have recognized that there is a serious democratic deficit in the way they're constructed. And the European Union is starting to do so many things that affect people's everyday lives. And this came to people's attention really most strongly during the financial crisis, that it simply can't continue to do that without a stronger democratic legitimacy. And so it's been aware of the importance of letting citizens more in. Of course, it wants to do that in a very controlled and cautious way. But Citizens Take Over Europe has strategically been trying to force its foot in the door and open as widely as possible the possibilities of meaningful citizen participation. And so we can already see some effects of that, and I'll let you ask the question afterwards. But now the European Commission starts to organize citizens' panels on some aspects of its policy agenda. Those citizen panels, which are randomly selected from around Europe, don't work in exactly the kind of way I would want them to work, and they don't have as much influence as I think they should have, but they're happening. It's a start, and it's something we can work with to push further. The European Parliament has also kind of recognized that it's going to have to organize more ongoing discussion with citizens and civil society if it's going to maintain its place in the European scene. And so it thinks about organizing citizens' agoras and other sorts of things inside the parliament where citizens can have a much more rigorous debate with the European parliamentarians. And so with actually a couple of the people who are unfortunately not with us this evening, but Jamie, for example, Jamie McKay, we're involved in a campaign to establish a permanent citizens' assembly for Europe as a way of kind of institutionalizing a citizens' body which would have its own legitimacy alongside the other institutions. So there's some things that are moving. Of course, there's also many enemies to all of this kind of process, both because there's those who disagree with it in principle, and there's those who might be open to it in principle, but don't want to have their own power challenged by new actors and citizens having their space in the room. So there's plenty of roadblocks and enemies, but democratic change is always like that.
Thank you very much, Nicolò. And I think you made very excellent points on a number of dimensions when it comes to the how to improve democracy at several levels. And you touched upon two quick points that I want to connect to, because Jamie, when he told me that he could not join us, he did send me an email saying, I really would like to say this, even if I cannot join you. And the point he wanted to make was partly what you were saying, that we must build on this culture of citizens' assemblies and participatory democracy. But he also, crucially from my perspective, said he remembered the Scotland's great tradition, great and rich democratic culture. And I want to mention two things in this respect. One is that, as we all kind of know or have heard, Scotland has a very long tradition of democratic debates that was also reflected upon a very informed debate during the referendum campaign in 2014. There was also a constitutional assembly on the independence question that was organized by the Scottish government. So we have this very rich democratic culture from one end, and we also have a very good and democratic electoral system that is, in fact, Nina, correct me if I'm wrong, inspired by the German electoral system. And it's a proportional representation that allows to have a very strong relationship between citizens and power. And so the question to you, Nicolò, is this: do you think that Scotland rejoining the EU could help foster and bolster this democratic culture that would allow citizens to have more of a say over the future of Europe?
Well, look, I think firstly, you're absolutely right that Scotland has a long history of democratic thought and perhaps even more broadly than that, anti-authoritarian thought and calls for freedom. I mean, David Hume and others are shining examples right across Europe of this line of thought. And so, of course, the cultural contribution in its widest sense of Scotland to European democracy also hasn't disappeared with the situation of Scotland being outside of the EU, and plenty of us right across the whole continent still treasure the cultural and political meanings that have arisen from Scotland. Then I think more directly in answer to your question, it also depends how it's done. And I'm very much an advocate that in all future enlargement, there ought to be a much stronger dimension of citizen participation in setting the terms of the enlargement and going through the accession process. And I think that that means, by the way, citizen participation, both of the people in the accession country and of other people right throughout the European Union. And I think that's really important, both because in some countries, and that's not Scotland's case, but in some countries, for example, in the Balkans, there's a lot of democratic reform that needs to be achieved before accession becomes conceivable. And working with current governments is not really a suitable way of trying to promote that. So working more directly with the citizens would be a way of doing that. But also, two other reasons. One reason is that we've all heard of this phenomenon of enlargement fatigue, the sense in some European countries that, you know, the club is just getting too big and it becomes unmanageable. So I think in terms of building consensus and democratic legitimacy for the enlargement process, and indeed enthusiasm, that's often underestimated aspect aspect of democracy has to also be our joy in being together. And what better way of promoting joy of people being together than actually bringing them together and discussing about how our future is going to look when Scotland rejoins, for example. So in terms of building consensus, and also in terms of people knowing each other, I think one of the great failures of previous rounds of enlargement was that there wasn't this process of really introducing each other to their new neighbours. And so a whole load of new countries join the European Union, and actually there's not so much known about them. Now, maybe one could say, well, Scotland's been a member for quite a while and plenty of people know it pretty well. But no, I think that there's still a great worth in a process which really brings people together. And so a participative process with citizens' assemblies, with festivals, with civil society initiatives and all the rest of it, for these reasons, for joy, for legitimacy, and for good friendship.
Thank you, Nicolò. Thank you very much for these excellent points. Thank you also for mentioning festivals, because we are going to say quite a bit about festivals, so different sort of festival in a moment. But we talked a lot about European democracy. However, as we know, this year there is a lot of important democratic challenges also in the Anglo-Saxon world. And probably there is no one in the world that knows better about democracy on both sides of the pond than the person that I'm about to call on stage, who is also the inspirator and the main driver of this campaign. You all know Anthony Barnett. Thanks so much, Anthony, for being with us tonight. It's lovely to see you.
Oh, it's very nice to see you. Very nice to see you. It's an honor to be here in place of Adam and Jamie. I don't feel I am not the main driver. You and Nina are the driver of the Europe in Scotland. I applaud it, and I help to initiate it, but I'm not in the driving seat.
Well, you might not be in the driver's seat, but you definitely are in the seat of the person that has the neatest view of what's going on in American and British democracy, in my view.
Yeah.
You wrote a beautiful book about the idea of taking control and the democratic processes that are driving change across the world in the democratic debate, but you focus specifically on the American situation. And you wrote a book, what was that, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, and it was in the aftermath of the Biden-Trump confrontation. It doesn't look like it's going to change much in that sense. What's your gut feeling for this new...
First thing I want to say, it's tremendous to hear you all, and especially Nicolò just now. And I think it's, you know, I so profoundly agree with everything that Nicolò had been saying, that I feel we want to open the thing up to where are there elements for a real conversation that we could probe. And I think one of them is that Nina said at the beginning that she felt that if there was a Trump presidency, this would, so to speak, oblige Europe to come together, to come to in response, because one of the striking things about Trump is that while he has said about Putin and about Xi in China and about Modi that they're very smart, he has declared that the European Union is his foe, rather extraordinary word to have used, sort of this slightly antique but very deliberately. It's not just because it wouldn't give him permission to build a golf course, it's because it represents the bulwark of liberal rule governed order that he is opposed to. I think that if he does get re-elected, it's very, very dangerous indeed, because there's something which I think many on the left, there's not many, but significant numbers of people, especially in some of the European countries, are rather pro-Putin when it comes to the conflict over Ukraine. And they see Putin as being against American hegemony. Whereas I think that what has happened since 1992 is two things. One is that the liberal democracy, the rule-based democracy, has in a way tried to put the market first. All those pressures, I was very glad to hear Nicolò saying, you know, if we're going to have participation and real deliberation and genuine citizen democracy, there will be enemies. And I think that that process of neoliberal, the liberal neoliberal domination, saying the market knows best, has attempted to depoliticize people, force them to hollowing out political parties and to make people feel that voting doesn't count. And with after the financial crisis, it became clear that actually the market doesn't know best and governments were needed. And so there was a kind of great ideological crisis of the system across the West, across Europe and the United States. And the right are seizing upon that. They're offering people a sign of a say. They're offering people a voice by attacking, you know, the elite. And what has emerged is, I don't know which is the right word for it. I mean, because I think that what you can see in Putin is not an opponent of American hegemony, but an expression of the worst aspects of American, corrupt American capitalism. So you could call it Trump-Putinism, or you could call it Putrumpism. But this, there is a process, a connected process, which they articulate. You know, Trump, when he was met as president with Putin, threw the translators, the American translators, out of the room. And he treats him as, in effect, a fellow, an ally, a smart gangster like himself. And the danger is that there are others inside the European Union. Orban is the outstanding example, but electorally as well, who, if Trump comes into office and Putin and he stops the American support for the Ukraine, the military support for the Ukraine, that the Trump, this Putrumpism also exists inside the European Union. It's an expression of the profoundly anti-democratic aspects of this kind of late capitalism, and I think it's very dangerous indeed. I'm not convinced that the structures in Europe are able to withstand it, and I think the reason that I'm of my concern is based precisely on what Niccolo has been saying, that the institutions, the law base, the important institutions that we do have not rooted themselves in popular support. So when accession takes place, there hasn't been a joyous meeting. There hasn't been a sense of experiencing this as something which we all share. And I'm afraid there's an aspect of this also which is true of Scotland. So what you say, Andrea, about the fact that Scotland has a model electoral system, that is true, and that Brexit is a very profoundly anti-democratic action for in terms of Scotland. But I'm afraid that the SNP itself reproduced a Westminster style of politics in Scotland. It did not open up Scotland to the kind of the, you know, the wildness of, you know, letting, it hasn't sufficient power to decentralize in terms of mayors, in terms of, you know, of release of popular energy, which is necessary. And on the contrary, what we had with the SNP was far too controlling, a very popular, but far too controlling and far too narrow. And that's led to this crisis of the leadership that that we have now. And so I think one of the things that we should be doing on this anniversary, and one of the things which I think you've done very successfully in the campaign, is to have this movement from below, which is not an SNP movement, which is not a party organized one, where people across the Europe saying, we want Scotland to rejoin, and people in Scotland are lifting up their heads and saying there's another politics here, which isn't sort of something where we have to defer to the leadership. There's something, we are part of a larger European movement. And I think we need to build that as deeply and urgently as we can, because the weakness of America, this is your question when it comes back to the United States, is that there's a good chance that Trump will burn out at the moment, at this moment in time, if there was an election tomorrow in terms of the Electoral College, what Nina said, there would be a popular majority for Biden, but he would lose. But, you know, November's a long time away, and there's a very powerful feminist vote. And there are a lot of young people who are very disconcerted by Biden will probably, you know, faced with the possibility of Trump, come to the polls. That must be the hope. Why? What is the process there? I thought Biden was a remarkably successful president. I wanted to step down. And we're in real trouble. I think the source of this trouble, this is the last thing I want to say, is that this liberal tradition can't reverse itself with any coherence. It spent 40 years telling us the market knows best. And now it's got to tell us that government is good. And government is good, and he's actually governed rather well. But he doesn't have the rhetoric. He can't speak this. He can't say this in a way where we can believe what he says. And therefore, there's a weakening taking place of the forces of potential renewal. That the enemy that Niccolo mentions is actively sensing the dangers of democracy in European Union.
Thank you very much, Anthony. That's a lot of very excellent points and very to the core of the problems we are facing. I think one of the latest things you said about democracy in Scotland, and in particular how the SNP might not always be up to the task and the need to re-energize a democratic movement, have triggered a few comments online. I can see debate on the people that are following on the YouTube channels that are broadcasting this event. On this note, I just want to say one thing from my external perspective of a European citizen that observes the democratic debate in Scotland, that whatever the shortcomings of the political parties with their actions in the Scottish Parliament, there is a general problem of this continuous denial of democracy that comes from the UK government that keeps refusing to accept that there is a democratic mandate for a referendum. And this triggers dynamics that, of course, produce disenfranchisement, disillusionment, people getting fed up with the political system. We need to acknowledge that there is a bottleneck that needs to be, we need to free this energy. Otherwise, people are going to be unhappy no matter the party. And of course, we keep this in mind also with what we are doing, because we, in a way, we would like European citizens to speak out for Scotland too, because we see this moment in which the Scottish people need a hand, need a voice, need the Europeans to be able to speak out. We have, to that end, put forward not just one but two petitions, one for Scots that wants to be heard and one for Europeans who want to reciprocate and say that Scotland is welcome back in the EU. We are going to put them up in a moment for everyone who hasn't signed them yet. But I would like to now move on the conversation also on the action on the ground that we as a campaign have put forward across Europe by bringing in Jane McKinnon. I will need to ask you, Anthony and Niccolò, to go backstage so that we can have more space for Jane. Otherwise, we will not have space for that. But thank you so much. I will bring you back in a moment. Jane, thanks so much for joining us. I understand you are on south of France, which is a great place to be every time of the year, but particularly in January, I suppose. How are you, first of all?
Very well, very well. And thank you so much for this lovely invitation. It's an honor to be here.
And you represent here our fantastic group of French activists that are one of the most important driving force of the campaign on the continent. I'm so happy that you're here because you can tell us a bit more about what you are doing and also about the fantastic love for Scotland that is still very strong across France, from the north to the south.
Oh, well, there is a great deal of love for Scotland in France. I say that because there are all kinds of pockets of fascination with Scottish culture and with an expression of wanting to connect with Scotland and taking joy in that connection with Scotland. And there are Franco-Scottish associations. So there is the Caledonia Society in Paris. There's another society called the Franco-Écossaise Society, which is a very special group because they are very interested in history, and they also support academic work on Franco-Scottish ties. There's also another group in Orléans called Old Alliance.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Jane. And you mentioned there are several festivals in different parts of France.
This has been part of our policy, our wish to connect the dots and connect all of these little pockets that I mentioned before. So in Brittany, there is an enormous intercultural Festival de Lorient. In more towards the center, in Aubigny-sur-Nair, where I was this weekend, there is an annual festival where they celebrate their own Franco-Scottish connections. And I salute them today. You'll have to check with them about what they're organizing for this year, but they have a fantastic festival. And last year there were over 40,000 people who attended. And in the south of France, there's a new young festival called Festival Écossais 1782. And it's very exciting what they are doing because they have attracted so many people who are interested in Scotland and in France's ties with Scotland. And so I shout out very quickly to their organizers, Eric and Marie-Nadège. We really want to support this brand new festival. There's also a Royal Scottish Country Dancing Society, which has chapters in Paris and Lyon. There's a Fédération, there's a French Federation of Pipers. There is an academic society for the French Society for Studying, for Scottish Studies. There are many, many different connections, and it's becoming more and more evident that we can all pull this together and really build our communities together. I like the idea of what Nicolò was talking about, you know, earlier on, of reintroducing people to each other and reintroducing new members of the EU to all of the others. I really like that idea of rebuilding communities. And that my experience, our experience of working with the team in France has been one of coming across wonderful new communities who are just very happy and full of joy in celebrating their connection with Scotland.
So nice to hear about all this stream of cultural connections and people that preserve these bonds over many, many years with personal efforts because they care, because they remember the stories, because they love the connection, the history. And of course, we would like to also to mobilize some of this energy for our political goals, if you want, because we really want citizens in Europe to speak out for the right of Scotland to self-determine and be able to rejoin the European Union if the people so wish. I'm going to keep you on screen because now from France, I want to move to my hometown, Rome, in Italy, from where we are joined by Guido Silvestri. Thank you so much for joining us, Guido. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for having me tonight. Very happy to join this conversation.
On top of reading the statement of solidarity with the Scottish people in the face of the judgment of the Supreme Court, you also chose to wear a kilt.
Yes, I was wearing a kilt. And I was telling the story that so everybody was very friendly to me, of course, and was asking me what clan I was part of. But of course, I'm not part of any clan. It was just a present. But I like to wear the kilt now and then. So it was a very nice evening with a nice group of people.
Well, thank you so much for doing that that day. I think it was very, very important for people in Scotland to know that there were Europeans ready to take the streets on a very cold day, very rainy day in many cities of Europe. And also doing so in front of an iconic monument make it all more vivid and important. And Guido, you're also the president of Volt Italia. You might want to say a bit about what Volt is, and also, if you want, what is Volt's position on the Scottish issue?
Okay, yes, I'm co-president of Volt Italy. Volt Italy is the Italian chapter of Volt Europe. Volt Europe is a European party. We consider ourselves just one party with one governance, one program, one assembly, and then we are forced to open national chapters because of the regulation. Let's say as Volt Europe is present in 30 countries, so more than the EU countries strictly. And let me put it this way. I think that the way we feel about Scotland is simply part of the EU. And to go farther in this direction, I think it's important to make a parallel. In Italy, we are doing, political battles in favor of Italian without citizenship. So there are people that are born in Italy or they followed all the schools in Italy, but still they don't have citizenship. And we think this is a shame. We are fighting for that. But now we realize we also have European without citizenship, which are Scots. And I cannot think about people more European than Scots. And what we are really trying to do, since we are going to participate to the next European election along with our list in Italy, as in many other countries, we want to put in our list Italians without citizenship, but we also love to put European without citizenship, like somebody from Scotland, to demonstrate in a very clear and plastic way that we are a European party and that we have very strict links to Scotland. So we shall try to understand if there is any availability from people from Scotland to be in our list. Reality is that this will not be accepted by the authority, because of course, if you're not from EU, you cannot participate. But I think it's still a very good occasion to raise this issue, this battle that we take care of. And so I really think it's a good way for us, for Volt and for Scotland to put the debate in the public Italian debate at least.
That's a very, very interesting provocation. In many ways, a lot of people were rightly angry across the UK about the fact that with Brexit they were deprived of the European citizenship. And there has been also people that appealed to the European Court of Justice, and legal battles have started off because of that.
Exactly.
Put that on the debate by raising a provocation like that, I think it would be very important and welcome. I also want to mention that we are running out of time. Too many good points and arguments from a very rich debate. But I want to bring in a bit what we are doing in terms of our advocacy. We had put forward in the last few months this new petition through which Scottish citizens can ask Europeans to raise the Scottish issue during the European election campaign. This is very important because this is the first European election in which Scottish citizens will not be able to vote for the European Parliament. and European citizens who are sympathetic to the Scottish right to be still part of the European project, we encourage them to speak out at debates, at events, in the occasions in which there is an opportunity to raise the Scottish issue on behalf of the Scottish people. And I want to also announce that we have decided to move our petition to a European platform called We Move Europe, where basically we can reach more Europeans. This is the number that I've signed so far to ask to include Scotland in the enlargement conversation, which is started in the last few months. We also have our petition open to Europeans that would like to express their solidarity to Scotland and demand European politicians to speak out. So very quick questions to both of you, Guido and Jane. Are you ready to take on board this battle to raise these points in the European election campaign that is coming up in May?
I think we have to. I think these are citizens' questions, and we need to take back our own voices in a way. I think it's very easy to silence oneself. It's very easy to censor oneself. And I think it's a very important question, the one of what really makes citizenship, and how do, in what way are we European citizens? And I think you know, Guido, that initiative of nominating Scottish candidates is fascinating because it really foregrounds how a community might want to nominate someone, but the notion of citizenship as it stands today now precludes that possibility. In other words, we want to be European as citizens, but we are only allowed to be European bureaucratically and legally. So that is a conversation that we should be asking politicians to think about really very sincerely when they are seeing communities having festivals and organizing tattoos, organizing events to express their joy in connecting with a specific culture. What does that mean? Why is that culture, which is so much a part of the historical fabric and which was part of the European Union, why now is it culturally excluded? I think we need to hear politicians talk about this, especially for anyone who is a candidate in the European elections. I'm sorry, and I took a long time, Guido.
Just to say that I think that this initiative to put Scottish candidates in our list is not a favor that we are doing to Scottish people. We need European citizens. It will be a very difficult election in Italy, a very difficult election in Europe. And how can we give up to sincere European citizens? So I think we can help you, but you have to help us to raise the European values. So I think it's a win-win proposition to be united against the rights in Europe, which is a very worrying future, let's say, and will not happen, definitely.
Thank you very much, Guido and Jane. I brought in back Anthony and Nicolò if they want to have a very final word, and thanking them as well very much for being with us today.
No, I think I was rabbited on a bit too long, so I apologize for that. These are very big issues which are facing us, and I think it's fantastic to try and use the elections to bring people to claim Europe for ourselves rather than to allow it to be taken away from us.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Nicolò, you want to have a final word?
It's very much the same sentiment. I think that the question of who is and who isn't a member of the European Union is a very important one, and it's the centre of your campaign. But it's perhaps still a less important issue than the way we work together across all kinds of borders, and building solidarity between people, because the forces that are opposed to our liberty and flourishing are not only political forces, they're also economic and corporate and technological and others. And so I really think that we ought to claim the identity as Europeans and as citizens of the world, and try and act in a way that forces the political institutions to catch up with us in terms of our ability to work together.
Thank you very much, Nicolò. I completely agree with everything you said. Thank you all to everyone that has contributed to this event and those that have watched us online. See you soon, and viva Scotland in Europe.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Join us again next week for the next episode of Scottish Independence Podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe and share. It all helps. Thanks. Bye now.